Okay, motion is to adopt the sections 800 and 1146-295 with the addition of subsection 3, relating to obtaining a credit card under false pretenses. Is there any objection to the motion? Okay, if there's no objection, the motion is not.
Well, what did you do?
Okay, there's going to be a new subsection 3.
I need to get the credit back.
No, I was there and talked with that, you told me.
Look at Montgomery Ward, then, did you?
I got it from Ward. Well, I had it from Ward for years, but there was a deal with my secretary. Made me apply for it because it had $5 gift certificate. You just applied. And then I got rejected. I didn't want to apply because she wanted me to. Then I got rejected. I got pissed. And I got Bank of America card and get my ass charged.
There's no rhyme or reason.
I remember when I went to my first credit card, I got rejected from MGL. I assumed that I couldn't get anything.
Okay, this amendment we have now is on criminal use agreement. Mark that amendment number 3.
Number 3?
Yeah.
You missed number 2, Ann.
I didn't get a credit card until I went out and bought a house. $59 worth of credit card. They clowned it for me. I had to find it myself.
Okay.
Oh, so
as soon as you go $60,000 again, you credit card. Well, it's a result of questions, but I decided to back this. I'm accepting it. Okay.
So we're, this was, you know, we only discussed this once in our
one hour.
We only discussed this once in our when we went over it for the first time. But Lisa had a number of suggestions which I agreed with here. So I did it in the amendment. This, by the way, is on page 77 of the bill. First of all, she felt that we should take out the culpability provision and just apply the ordinary rules of culpability, which I did. Before it said knowingly charges. Now we just leave out the knowing requirement and general rules of culpability would apply. The other difference was Fred had a question regarding scheme or business. Under the bill, provision appearing in 661 for the first degree provision on line 9, it referred to as part of a scheme or business of making or collecting usurious loans. Fred wanted that provision to parallel federal law, which we looked up, and federal law uses the term business of lending money or other property at a usurious rate. So that's been substituted in amendment number 3, line 9 through 10. The section on possession of usurious loan records has been redrafted somewhat, I think, to make it clearer the culpability requirement there. And it's simply that you have to possess it with knowledge of its contents, the record used to record criminal usurious transactions, prohibited by section 685 of this chapter. I have some problems with these sections, only in the sense that I'm not too sure you need to. And certainly, and this is a classification problem, I just want to show you, alert you to it. The second degree, if you would have a second degree one at all, it shouldn't be a violation. My own recommendation on that would be to knock out the second degree offense, just keep the first degree provision, which is the business loan sharking, and knock out the second degree offense.
So moved.
Objection. Okay. There's a motion for the committee then to delete section 690.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't even care. Okay. Turn it up there. Up there? Okay. Okay, there's no objection that has been passed at 369. Does anybody have any question or comment on the other two sections on 685 and 700?
Can I ask a general question? Why do we sometimes define a term
within the statute, sometimes by a definition.
I even know the answer.
Okay.
Because if the definition's not used any other place other than that offense, we kind of got three things. There's the general definition for something used in many different statutes. Then where it's like only used in that section, so we keep the definition in that section so you don't have to go to the general definition. Or if that's the only place it's used, it's sometimes easier to find it right in the context of the crime. You can have to refer down to another section to see the definition of that word. I think we just said that on that. Yes, Jim, all of them. Some of them have said the wrong definition. Which word were you thinking of? No, instead of just saying that, defining the criminal user.
Oh,
yeah.
Good
chance. If I wanted to, this guy came to me and wanted to borrow $5,000 for 90 days, I told him I'd loan him $20,000 back in 90 days. With this part in here, not that I've done that kind of thing before, but I didn't want to. You got in here as a part of a business of lending money or other property. Would that exclude just an individual where a friend came up wanting to borrow $5,000 and he'll give you $6,000 back after the game or whatever?
I read that as unless you prove that a person was in business who was a loan shark, it doesn't apply. That's correct. And
I think there is a problem with it. What if the person is in the business of lending money, but he's not in the business of lending money at a usurious rate?
That's
he
not
just
covered.
Does it once.
That's correct, and it's not covered. He has to be in the business of lending money or property at a usurious rate.
He has to be in an unlawful business.
That's correct. If the intent is to get loan sharks, you could get it just with subsection 1. You don't need a subsection 2 to assume.
Were you done?
Yeah,
I'm
done. You're okay, Ed. I'm not sure that you might not be in violation of others. State law.
Oh, yeah,
it's
going to
be an unenforceable
loan.
Yeah, there's no question about
that. Collect that interest in court.
Civil remedies are there. The question is, when do we criminalize it? And first degree covers, you know, the business of loan sharking. The second degree doesn't have to be a single loan.
Bill?
Refinish that subject matter. I had a question. Did you knock out second degree
entirely? Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, 690.
By the way, this is the first time this has been that I redrafted that to include business of lending money or property at a usurious rate. I know Ann, it's motion to me that she may have some problems just the way it's phrased, and Jim has not seen it. So I'd like to, if in fact we find that it's not clear or something, we'll come back with an amendment. But I think that the intent here is to knock out the second degree to simply eliminate the single transaction.
Where do we come up with the 25%?
Okay. We came up with 25% from New York law. New York uses the provision 25% under existing law.
You can follow New York law.
No, that's not true. That's not true. I'll tell you why. 25% also is higher. Okay, like federal law only applies when the rate you charge is twice the amount authorized by state law. And under state law, I believe that the legal rate, I think, is something like 10%. I've got it.
Well, it depends.
Yeah, it depends on what kind of loan it is. But clearly, under the code, if it's authorized by state law, and some loans are that are over, you know, like 1.5% is authorized by, I believe, the Small Loans Act. It's authorized by state law. It's not subject to that.
It was a figure higher than the existing loan rate.
You think it's too low or too high?
Well, I'm thinking it may be too low.
Perhaps.
Because we've got some, you know, very legal operations going on, 1.5% a month, that's 18% per annum.
Oh.
And we're only 7 points under that. I'm trying to think if that's the highest I know. Maybe there are higher ones. But are legitimate. What do these household finance corporations charge on 9-day loans or 120-day loans? 24. Okay. Well, we're getting dangerously close to setting up a policy here that sounds reasonable, but maybe we're... Did that come up when the commission...
No, it's just they felt that since you have a provision in there that says unless otherwise authorized by law, you cover the legitimate types of, you know, loan transactions. So even though household finance may charge 30% in a year effectively, that is not obviously...
Yeah, I think that's outrageously high, but there may be reasons for it.
Well, your point is...
Yeah,
Yeah.
Your point, though, is maybe well taken in the sense that federal law does require it to be twice the legal rate allowed by state law for essentially the loan sharking provisions to apply. So you may want to have it a little higher.
So, 48%.
Larry? I would speak in favor of keeping it at 25% because that's steep enough that a person can get himself in a lot of serious trouble. That which is permitted by law gets people into serious trouble. Remember my first small finance company. I didn't think I was ever going to be working. It was legal.
Well, maybe, I'm not proposing we raise it or lower it, but maybe in the commentary, I think that if we pass this session, and in the summer, some legitimate business comes up and says, hey, thanks, guys, you just put me out of business.
Maybe it's already in there. It's already a 25.
Yeah, well, that couldn't happen since it's not being authorized or permitted by law.
Well, maybe the statute can be silent on some particular brand of loan.
I don't think they're specific. The only way you can lend money is there's specific provisions in the banking statutes that, you know, for pennies and what have you. It's all set up.
Well, how about for household finance or for
that's
going to be. What about other things we may not?
Let me point out that under the Small Loans Act, on loans less than $1,500, interest may be charged as high as 3% a month.
Yeah, well, that's 36%
right,
a year.
Right. So.
Then we can just, in the commentary, just put, we're not trying to, we don't want to put anybody out of business, and if they want, they shouldn't be forced out of business in the interim.
Yeah, this already, as a matter of fact, I mean, the commentary already says that, a small business loan pursuant to AS 620, for example, would not violate the statute. It says, to be a violation of either statute, a person must not be authorized or permitted by law to charge an interest rate exceeding 25%. And I specifically give the example of small business loans.
One of the differences here is that there is no dollar amount here. In the Small Loans Act, if we're talking about beneficial finance or HFC, it's $1,500 now. It's going to be jacked up probably this session to $5,000. But if we're going to raise this, we'd almost have to talk limits.
I'd like to work it out.
Yeah, I think that's a good point.
One thing, too. Code won't take effect until July 1, 1979. So people will be, it's not going to sneak up on them all of a sudden. I mean, it's going to have almost more than a year, assuming where the pass is set.
Okay. Is there any other questions on amendment number 3?
Terry, one suggestion. We have, okay, now we have first degree and possession of usurious loan records. Possession of usurious loan records is made an A misdemeanor. Most of the time, whenever we have a possession offense in the code, it is treated identically to the actual offense. In other words, possession of gambling records is treated identically to engaging in unlawful gambling. In other words, if it's a C felony to engage in unlawful gambling, possession of gambling records reflecting that is also a C felony.
Okay.
Now, here we have.
Okay. Hold this one.
I'm just trying to consolidate this.
No, let's just hold that. I mean, you just want to change the test.
Okay. Well, the thing is, yeah, I guess you have to decide that, because what I was simply saying is to say that criminal usury. Have one statute, knock out possession of usurious loan records, and say criminal usury is the charging or to the possession of. In other words, knock out a separate offense. But maybe you should wait till you classify. And I could do it later.
Well, I guess we're going to rewrite it. We shouldn't do that now.
But you would have to decide to up the penalty of possession of usurious loan records to a C felony in order to do that. Okay. Suggestion. No, it's just two consolidation.
I'm going to do this once in a while.
Okay.
Well, I always think the thing with the attribute.
Yeah. One man's stealing is another man's property.
Lower fence.
Okay, let's leave that.
You want to, Mr. Chairman, I can move you down.
Okay, yeah, we can. Okay, there's a motion to drop what's left of 685 to 700. Amendment number 3. Is there any objection to the amendment? No objection. Amendment's done.
Mr. Chairman, I want to apologize. Unforeseen. Otherwise, I would have been very sorry. I need to miss any of this.
We'll be here tonight at 7.
I will be here tonight at 7.
Oh, murder.
Yeah, I was down there. I just got up.
I love the
Colonel
Cobeck.
This is the
last one. It's a food issue.
Okay, this is a murder. We'll call that amendment number 4. Okay. Now, what this does, based on the request to have 2 degrees of murder, is that it divides murder into 2 degrees. The first degree offense covers 2 forms of conduct: intent to cause death, or knowing that your conduct is substantially stirring to cause death. You cause death. Now, when I first discussed this, I said when I come back with my first degree murder statute, I will simply have intent to cause death and not include knowing that your conduct is substantially stirring to cause death. Well, after discussions with Jim, doing a fair amount of thinking about it, I'm convinced that intending to cause death and knowing your conduct is substantially stirring to cause death are identical. They should be treated identically as first degree murder. Murder in the second degree covers intent to cause serious physical injury, reckless under circumstances manifesting extreme indifference to value in life, or felony murder. Now, pursuant to the vote last meeting, the felony murder rule has been altered on page 2, lines 11 through 21.
That's a felony murder paragraph, 110 and 2.
We have murder in the first degree, murder in the second, and then defense of the murder is a separate.
So. Yeah, some of the defenses apply to first, some apply to second, some are affirmative defenses, other peripheral defenses. So the felony murder rule has been rewritten based on your vote. Secondly, this is a change you haven't voted on.
They're coming. Yes, defense.
Okay. Remember we had this discussion about burglary. When burglary is the only underlying felony and someone is killed, when you kill the person, you break into a house and you kill the intended victim, that should not give rise to felony murder. It should be simply an intentional killing. Okay, that's in subsection 2, lines 22 through 24. What we did, however, in terms of drafting it, we made it an affirmative defense. Now that, in the commission's proposal, it never really was decided what kind of defense it was or not. It just simply says that in the tentative draft provision, it simply says that felony murder does not apply in that type of situation. The commission never decided whether it should be an affirmative defense or a regular defense. When we drafted the bill, we put it as a regular defense. However, working with it, I'm convinced it should be an affirmative defense, and that's the recommendation that I've provided.
Barry, you want to explain how this number? The affirmative defense would work.
All right. It's very complicated. I am acting under heat of passion. If I am acting under heat of passion, I have a defense to murder, which mitigates it to manslaughter. Okay? Now, yeah, and it's existing law. If I'm acting in heat of passion, let us assume.
It's in the code now that it's automatically. You're not correct there, are you? That if you
I don't know.
If you commit in the heat of passion, it becomes manslaughter.
Well, if that is correct, that's
second degree then.
No, that is not correct. It becomes.
What's the element of second degree murder in the present code? With acting without premeditation.
Second degree murder?
Yeah.
It is. That is correct. In existing law.
In existing law.
Yeah, it's premeditation.
And it's a lack of premeditation. The second degree, if you have premeditation,
first degree you have, not have.
The second degree is a crime of passion. And
no, it's not. I don't think that's correct, sir. Manslaughter would be that. Heat of passion would be manslaughter. See, the thing is, it's both times you have an intentional killing. Both first and second degree murder, you have an intentional killing. The only difference is one is premeditated. You raise the heat of passion defense in existing law, you would be knocked down to manslaughter. And is that correct?
I believe so, yeah.
What would be a second degree murder?
Well, everything's second degree murder.
Well, that's the problem.
With existing law,
the first isn't. Now, if there is, the thing is that first degree murder, second degree murder under existing law is an intentional killing that is not premeditated.
Right.
And you could premeditate a killing and still be under the heat of passion.
Sounds like an old song.
Okay. All right, as I would say, okay, you have a defense to murder that you acted under heat of passion. Okay. Let's assume that this man is acting under the heat of passion, breaks into someone's house to kill his victim. All right? He breaks into the person's house to kill the victim. In breaking into the house, he has committed burglary in the first degree. All right? He's committed burglary. Okay. So that brings into play the felony murder rule. Okay. Under the felony murder rule, he would be liable for the deaths of anyone that occurs during the commission of the burglary. Well, and he's obviously killing the person in the house. Okay, under the felony murder rule, the heat of passion doctrine does not apply. Okay, so he can't raise the heat of passion defense. So what this provision does, it says that when you break into someone's house to kill the victim, you're not going to be convicted of felony murder. You're going to be convicted of an intentional killing. All right, and since you're going to be prosecuted for intentional killing, you can raise the heat of passion defense. And unless you have that provision, say Jim and I, say we are going to say that Jim and I both decide to kill such a source here. It's very difficult to explain. Okay, let's assume that there is this. Let's assume that there's a woman in this house, and it's my house. If I go in to kill her in a heat of passion, it's my house. I haven't committed burglary because it's my house. I haven't entered unlawfully. It's my house. However, if Jim goes into the house and it's not his house, he has entered unlawfully. The only difference being is that it's my house and it's not Jim's house. Under that circumstance, I would be guilty of an intentional killing, whereas Jim would be guilty of felony murder. I, as a result of being guilty of an intentional killing, would be able to raise the heat of passion defense and mitigate it to manslaughter. Jim would not, since he would be guilty of felony murder. This just equalizes it. It's very, very complicated. I'm sorry.
I think I understand it. I don't want to equalize it.
Mr. Chairman or Mr. Vice Chairman?
Mr. Vice Chairman.
Either one of you, if you are both. You're saying. What is an affirmative?
He has to prove it by preponderance of the evidence.
That's where the defendant's
going. He has to prove, in other words...
He has to prove that he broke in the house intending to kill.
It's not felony murder if he can prove that the only underlying crime was burglary.
And he intended to kill the victim. But it is an intentional killing. And then he gets into intentional killing, he raises the heat of passion defense and gets mitigated into manslaughter. He moves out of, it's interesting in the way the code is set up now, because he gets out of second degree, he gets into first degree. In other words, he's charged under the code, the way the code is drafted now, with 2 degrees of murder. He's charged with felony murder in the second degree. He says, I'm not guilty of felony murder, I'm not guilty of second degree murder, I'm guilty of first degree murder, an intentional killing. Charge him with that. He's charged with that.
So that I can have available to me the defense.
Exactly. Right. Exactly.
For how many people would really wish to think that?
Could I bring up one little appeal with the chair? That doesn't make sense to me for some reason.
It doesn't make sense to me, but I don't know. Maybe I feel as though it should be not a defense that the only underlying crime is burglary.
Right.
And an intended to kill. I mean, maybe I'm getting all mixed up, but felony murders usually when commit murder in the process of committing
felony. Or anybody kills anybody at the time you're committing one of the listed felonies. Or one of the applicable felonies.
There? Well, I don't like the reworking of the murder statute in the first place. Hearing you say, you know, felony murder in the second degree isn't as good to me as...
Murder in the second degree, including felony murder.
Yeah, but you said felony murder in the second degree, and I like it when we have felony murder, period. I don't agree with the way we're breaking it down. You say you're supposed to classify, you know, for elevating the first, I don't think that's actually what's going to happen. We're going to end up lowering the second, and in regard to the felony murder statute too, I'm uncomfortable with the whole rewrite, including the affirmative defense provision down here, the underlying crime burglary, etc.
Before we just had the one offense that went as always 0 to 100 years or something.
You still have that. Fred asked me to bring back, or someone asked me to bring back 2 degrees of murder, so you could sort of ruminate on.
That was the suggestion they made at the hearing by the bar association.
I think it's been also made by some prosecutors too.
Now we have first and second request pass.
You don't yeah. Add criminal negligence on the
side.
You
have to bring it
No, I've been reading the stuff. This is on the fences. This isn't how they finish the hunt side. I looked at all the stacks and I thought I had
one. What's that?
On the murder.
Oh, here you go. Sorry.
Mark that number 4, Fred. This is 4 and 1 justification with 3 or what?
No, the justification has not been edited.
Mr. Chairman, may I just point out the other changes that were made that were, you know, that I think could be adopted. On page 3, line 5, where you say hearsay words, we added the adjective mirror. I think what inadvertently left out of the original draft. So now it includes mirror. So now it reads on page 3, line 4, mirror insulting words, mirror insulting gestures, or mirror hearsay reports. On line 12, subsection 2, pursuant to your decision, we included within manslaughter, intentionally aiding another person to commit a suicide. Also, on that same page, the definitions, we knocked out, I believe, 2 or 3 definitions which the committee felt were unnecessary, which I feel are unnecessary. So the only changes in this that weren't voted on at the last meeting were, number one, the classification of that burglary thing that I just tried to explain is an affirmative defense. And number two, the adding of the word mirror on page 3, line 5. Those were the only changes that weren't voted on at the last meeting, unless Jim...
2 degrees of
obviously,
burglary was not voted on. They just wanted it further considered.
Obviously, yeah. I think that was made clear. And Mr. Chairman, Mr. Dan Hickey was the person that... requested that the murder provision include the section on burglary, which I just tried to explain. I think before you make a decision on it, you should try to allow a request that Dan explain the reason for having it. It was at his request.
Right. I'd just like to know the difference between insulting gestures and mere insulting gestures, insulting words and mere insulting words, and hearsay reports and mere hearsay reports. Yes.
All right, I read it. Jim, why don't you do it?
I read that as all of those things are relevant to whether there was serious provocation, but if you only had one of them, that wouldn't suffice. If you merely had insulting words, that wouldn't be serious provocation, or mere insulting gestures wouldn't be serious provocation, or mere hearsay reports of conduct without more. However, if you had those with something more, or had one of them with something more, then the combination might be sufficient to establish serious provocation. That's my understanding.
That's correct. And the way it was drafted, Fred, originally was that it said mere insulting words, mere insulting gestures, or hearsay reports. We didn't have the adjective mere before it, and if we're going to have it anywhere, it should apply to all three.
Sure is the height of legalese, you know. I can just hear the counselor, and was backed into a corner saying to the court, Mr. Your Honor, the mere universe notwithstanding.
Yes, well, it's subject to interpretation. Could I suggest another word?
Lisa.
Maybe we could say something along the lines of does not include insulting words solely, insulting gestures solely, or hearsay reports solely. That's a little more definitive.
Do you think it is? Maybe it should be just solely at the beginning and then the parallel construction afterwards. Would that be definite? To be safe, should we put it in each place like she suggested?
I'm inclined to do it the way she said. I'm not positive that's necessary, but it seems like a good idea. I don't have any objections saying so.
Seems seems a little more definitive to me, but maybe.
How about saying three insulting gestures and two insulting words? Or two insulting words and
equals
four
one hearsay report.
An insulting purchase.
Bill?
Fred.
And was trying to attract your attention over there.
I just had one comment. When you, as the committee considers a felony murder, in present law, to the extent that we do have a felony murder law, it's felony murder is first degree murder.
To the extent that we do, I didn't think we did.
Well,
we do. It's in the statute, the way our courts have interpreted it.
We have a felony murder rule, but it requires an intentional killing.
The courts have said it requires an intentional killing. So to that
therefore,
extent,
it's not really true felony murder.
Not really true felony murder, but the statute says felony murder is first degree murder.
I think I'd like to hear what Vicki has to say on that particular section. Before we go to the, I don't know anybody else. But I think it would be a good idea to bring it back down to his suggestion.
That's which one? The burglary one?
Yeah.
That's correct.
Wow.
Is that after you? I'm just saying, is that it?
Yeah, well, let's try to get this solely and merely resolved.
It's not controversial.
I put Jim.
It's not changing substance, so I just assumed that Jim would redraft. Nobody raised hell about it.
I think we're having some kind of importance.
Yeah, let it be noted for the record that the Republican members are holding a caucus immediately outside the door, and they are not all smoking.
I feel as though I should abstain or something on this felony murder because I
don't think we'll act on that.
I'm having trouble with
it. Mr. Chairman, I felt that what you requested me to do was to bring back 2 degrees of murder to show what it looked like. And that's what we did. We also, obviously, making the defenses, we made a few changes there. But that is what the 2 degrees of murder looked like.
Well, the feeling, remind me, you're the person who really led the charge on this. The feeling on the 2 degrees was not so much to do something in felony murder as to make an A-plus murder, right?
Yeah.
So that is...
Most of our discussion when we were talking about the possibility of splitting murder into 2 degrees did not address felony murder, assumed that it would remain with other murder, I guess, and then that we would create a more exalted murder. A crime that was of a higher level for the kind of murder that's traditionally classed as premeditated in recent U.S. or recent states racial cases, notwithstanding. So maybe we got into the catch 22 because we didn't care much about plugging it into the montage of defenses. But they didn't talk too awful much about, you know, that it would change anything with regard to a felony murder situation. So,
You have to put felony murder in one degree or the other. We put it in second degree, assuming that you would feel that it was less serious than the intentional killing.
Well, Mr. Chairman, there's one thing that does occur to me. You know, the entire strange situation that he was describing would not exist. This is just from a structural standpoint. I'm not saying I would be in favor of this. If we kept 2 degrees of murder, but simply make felony murder the first degree.
No, I don't think that's true.
The problem
it still exists because you would want to get out of felony murder into intentional murder, so you could get out of intentional murder into manslaughter. He'd be charged with felony murder.
Oh, okay.
He'd say charged with
intentional. Just create another level of confusion.
It's one of these things.
Right.
The way that Philip did was a feel good. I'm actually up there at last.
That's what I've always felt.
44 days.
You mean the way 661 is written?
Right.
Well, if you look on page 45 to 61 in line 2, you have the same business about burglary. I mean, this is not a new idea that we just chucked in here.
But yeah, well, that's... I think Mr. Dackler's points were going to the idea of having 2 degrees of murder.
Oh, okay. I thought you were addressing this business of burglary of felony murder.
We decided to look into this and see what we came up with.
Okay, why don't we set that aside for a while? We'll get Vicki down here and move along.
Should I move on then to the next area?
Yeah. Did you? Yeah.
Okay. This is arson, the next subject, and this is directly to Fred's suggestion. You don't have...
Are we going to number this?
Can I do sexual assault?
I haven't had a chance really to look at that. I'd prefer to hold that off until tonight so I could look at it to see what we brought back, if we could do that at all.
You got another one?
Well, yeah, this is... Remember that evening we were... That ill-fated evening we discussed burning down your own house?
Okay, mark this one coming around number five.
Okay. I'll later ask you what 3, 2, 1 are.
I don't
think you should be...
I don't think you should be convicted of manslaughter. I didn't feel that it was adequately covered unless there was specific reference to it. And it wasn't in the original bill, but it is. I went, you know, the thing is, every other code refers to specifically intentionally killing, intentionally aiding a suicide.
I don't think that's. The problem is, of course, if you can't prove it's a suicide, then it's murder, probably, at some degree. Or but if it really is suicide, I don't know. I just think people ought to have the ability to commit suicide if they want it. If somebody else wants to help them,
well, Lisa, the reason the amendment is there is to clarify the fact that the subcommittee wanted to include intentionally aiding suicide as manslaughter. As the bill was drafted 661, I felt that it was not clear that that was the result.
Of course, on that subject, it is current law that intentionally aiding suicide is manslaughter. That has been passed since 1884. It is, I think, in most other jurisdictions. So we would be making a major policy decision if we were to say that you can go ahead and hand people with poison or whatever, and that you're not subject to any criminal liability.
Well, if I may pursue this a little further, if you hand the invalid the poison and you can't prove later that invalid demanded or asked you and begged you to hand that poison to them, then you are subject.
Well,
right.
You know, that's a strange way of putting it, because of course, in a fact situation like that, someone would be trying to prove other elements of another homicide by beyond a reasonable doubt with circumstantial evidence, and it's pretty difficult to prove.
Why don't you have a statement from somebody who wants to commit suicide? I'm committing suicide, and my friend is trying to help me, and then they do. Should that person still be?
Chairman, I may sound very ancient about it, but I think so. What in fact happens, I suppose, is at least under current law, of course, we're clear now, sentencing too, but what happens to current law is that person is certainly not likely to get the highest sentence that would be offered for manslaughter compared to other kinds of manslaughter, which would be pretty extreme.
Make a policy decision. Manslaughter at all. Okay, let's go on to amendment number 5. Can you bring that up, because at least two people
want to
change it?
Sure. The idea of eliminating intentionally aiding a suicide from the definition of manslaughter.
What's wrong with it?
What?
What's wrong with it?
Fred suggested.
You made
it. I haven't suggested.
Don't think you'll
yourself?
Yeah. Well, I think that, like Fred said, that would be changed. That's a policy decision. I don't think we ought to. I can see all kind of things getting into that.
No, that's murder. That's murder. The difference, let me give you the hypothetical is, go to the store, buy me the poison, I'm going to do away with myself. You go to the store, buy me the poison, do away with yourself.
Disconnect the intravenous, whatchamacallit.
No, I'm not, no, that's murder.
I really think that if you know that the person is in danger or going to
be
sad,
you're going
to
I think that's right. I'll try to give you back a report on it.
I don't think you have an obligation to go get a doctor or call somebody and try to stop that person from taking their life.
Okay, that's often true. But there are people who are absolutely determined to kill themselves. And I keep thinking of the case of the brother who killed his brother. After the guy, I can't can't even remember all the circumstances, but he was in an iron lung and he was paralyzed from his neck down, and he asked his brother to kill him. And he did. And I don't remember whatever happened to that, but I mean, in
well,
a situation like that.
Well, that situation would constitute other murders, but Barry and I were just
not
talking about
a suicide.
No, because
that guy was completely
because the guy in the iron lung has no capacity for committing suicide at all. He can request someone else to do something, and that's that person's total decision. And then, so it would seem that that is not aiding the suicide of another, but actually is a level of homicide other than aiding another suicide.
If I want to do it, I want to. Then I would have to buy some arson.
We'll give her a copy of this tape.
Bring the arson home.
Well,
take that coffee and drink it. And I tell the police that, you know, you can get it when you leave, and I just buy the arson.
Oh, well, no, I mean, you have to be able to prove that that was her intention. I mean, you can't just go around saying so-and-so asked you to kill her. But I think, I mean, obviously, if you did it, I think you'd have to be able to prove that. Maybe I'm into an area that I would recommend
in this code, when you've got a good point, but you can think about it wrong, but if for the purpose of this code, you make that kind of a policy change, I have to see probably something we ought to look at later. I think I would leave the court with an obligation to stop the suicide on a.
It's a universal type of prohibition.
Can I move on to arson?
Excuse me?
We'll move on to your arson. This we didn't do any of that.
I think that's correct, except assault. Arson in the first, second, and third degree. For those of you who were here on that ill-fated night when we discussed arson the last time, there were some problems with it. It's been redrafted. It's just basically following the suggestion of Fred and also some other states. Arson in the first degree is intentionally damaging any property by starting a fire or causing an explosion, and the act recklessly places another person in danger of serious physical injury. Arson in the second degree is intentionally damaging a building by starting a fire or causing an explosion. Across the board, any building. Then, subsection B provides, as Fred suggested, that it is a defense that no other person other than the defendant had a possessory, proprietary, or security interest in the damaged property, or if someone else had those interests, they consented in the burning, and the defendant's sole intent was to damage or destroy the property for a lawful and proper purpose. I'm pretty happy with this amendment in terms of getting at what you wanted. Let me first tell you what it does. It says that if you burn a building belonging to someone else, I'm sorry, if you belong a building and someone other than you had a possessory, proprietary, or security interest, which would include a mortgage, that it is you're guilty of the crime unless they consent. And further, subsection 2 requires that your sole intent is to damage or destroy the property for a lawful and proper purpose, i.e., clearing your lot. It's cheaper to do it that way. Now,
that was anti-subsection.
Okay. The situation is that that language in subsection 2 says that if you burn your house with a purpose to defraud the insurer, it is going to be arson in the second degree because it's not a lawful and proper purpose. Now, that language, lawful and proper purpose, appears in New York and Illinois, and they've had their code for a while, so I just didn't, you know,
we'll
dream up this approach.
Okay, and we'll get the court interpretations of that.
Yeah, if there are any. Arson in the third degree, Fred, is your suggestion, and I did make one change to this. This says, by recklessly starting a fire or causing an explosion, it causes physical injury to another person. The change being that you suggested that it applied only to serious physical injury. I did physical injury to eliminate the problem of an overlap with assault, because as you remember, the assault provision referred to recklessly causing serious physical injury by means of a dangerous instrument.
Yeah.
This provision only requires physical injury. So the penalty structure makes sense. In other words, if you burn a dwelling and you cause physical injury, or even serious physical injury, you may be guilty of a C felony. If you burn you burn a building or a dwelling and you cause serious physical injury, you don't prosecute it.
You said serious physical injury twice. You meant physical injury the first time. Serious physical injury results in a B felony under the assault statute.
That's correct. That's correct. And if it's just physical injury, it's a C felony under here. And I think that's a good way to deal with it.
This is the Narnia Hotel.
Yes.
You have serious physical injury.
No, this is
physical injury.
Well, there are two. No. Well, actually, I have both. In first degree, it's serious physical injury.
Yeah, but you're intentionally doing it.
Intentionally doing it. You don't even have to cause it. You just have to expose the person to the risk of serious physical injury. Subsection in the third degree provision, you have to cause physical injury, but it's a reckless type of conduct. I think this gets at the stuff you wanted to get at.
So the Norio Hotel fire situation, if the people are injured but not what we call serious physical injury, the person can be guilty of a C felony if recklessness can be proven.
Yes, and intoxication is recklessness.
And if there's serious physical injury that can be shown, he can be charged with assault such that a B felony treatment
That's
can
correct.
Apply. That sounds consistent. Current law is that the causing a fire by means other than intentionally that results in injury is only an A misdemeanor, which is what we talked about before, and I feel that it would be raised to a C felony.
Mr. Chairman, I think that's important that you decide whether the treatment that I gave to arson in second degree is proper, because it does reflect, number one, that burning with intent to defraud an insurer is arson. It also reflects that if you burn a house in which there's a mortgage and the bank has to consent, it, it's also arson.
Took care of that real well.
Yes, Mayor, need
like
gun.
Need a gun.
Yeah.
Do
this for a living, Barry.
Yeah.
He does do it for a very good living.
No.
Well, you know, compared to what I used to do.
That's right. Any other comments? Can't compete with that kind of thing.
Any other comments
on
amendment 5?
Shall we move on?
One question before you make your amendment.
I'll tell you about the moment.
Well, how did this, was there anything in there, Barry?
Yes.
Do you remember the recommendations made by Barclay and Bates and some of them? Are they pretty well covered?
Yes, I believe they're very adequately covered. I think the coverability there is clearer. Yes. And I think they, you know, considering what we've done here in terms of burning your own house, becoming arson, but it's a defense to it, you know, if you prove it, I think everyone's going to be happy with that. I'm sorry, not if you prove it. It's a defense to arson.
Hope the commentary is going to have some explanation of the defrauding the bank, defrauding
the
insurance company.
Yes, the commentary of the other states specifically refer to that as being an improper service.
There's a little thing coming from
results in injury is only an A misdemeanor, which is what we talked about before, and I felt that it would be raised to a C felony.
Mr. Chairman, I think that's important that you decide whether the treatment that I gave to arson in second degree is proper, because it does reflect, number one, that burning with intent to defraud an insurer is arson. It also reflects that if you burn a house in which there's a mortgage and the bank hasn't consented, it's also arson.
You took care of that real well.
Mr. Mayor,
neatly
done. Neatly done.
Yeah.
Do this for a living, Barry.
Yeah.
He does do it for a very good living.
No.
Well, you know, compared to what I used to do.
That's right. Any other comments? Can't compete with that kind of thing.
Any other comments on amendment 5?
Shall we move on?
One question before you make your amendment.
I'll tell you about the moment.
Well, how did this, was there anything in there, Barry?
Yes.
Do you remember the recommendations made by Barclay and Bates and some of them? Are they pretty well covered?
Yes, I believe they're very adequately covered. I think the coverability there is clearer. Yes. And I think they, you know, considering what we've done here in terms of burning your own house, becoming arson, but it's a defense to it, you know, if you prove it, I think everyone's going to be happy with that. I'm sorry, not if you prove it. It's a defense to arson.
Hope the commentary is going to have some explanation of the defrauding the bank, defrauding
yes.
the insurance company.
Yes, the commentary of the other states specifically refer to that as being an improper service.
There's a little thing coming from my mind, not real sure. I have to say that capital deal, but bonds. What happens is it covered? What would we cover? Anything burned in West cover up crime. Commit crime of burglary, then you set the place on fire so that they can not tell it.
If you could prove that, then that negates the defense under B and would become arson in the second degree.
At a minimum.
At a minimum. It would be arson in the second degree because it was not for a lawful and proper purpose.
And if someone dies, it's going to be felony murder.
All right. Okay.
Or if someone is seriously injured, it becomes a class A felony.
Fred, that's not correct. It doesn't have to be someone seriously injured. You have to recklessly place the person in danger or risk of serious injury.
Yeah, that's right. Risk, got it.
Fred.
Chairman, the other comment before I or anybody else moves it is that I think this is another one of those situations because people don't expect to find a thing relating to a fire and assault provision, which is one of the disagreements we got in when we were talking about this. I think it's crucial that the commentary include a recommendation, a specific recommendation, to the reviser of statutes that
there be a cross-reference cite under arson in the third degree, stating that when it rose to the higher level of causing serious physical injury, it could be prosecuted as assault resulting in B felony treatment.
I will do that.
So that will be sitting right there. Some policeman or somebody else is reading through the code. He sees the annotation, small print, right after arson of third degree, and he goes to the other part of the code.
Good idea.
Okay, Fred.
Ed ought to move it. I moved too many.
Okay, Ed.
I'll move you.
Ask you next.
Is there any objection to the motion? Amendment 5 is adopted.
And we have amendment number 6.
What's your name?
Well, I think this might be the last one today, but then tonight, that got to be good.
What's the subject of this one?
Amendment related to kidnapping.
Hey, that's goody.
Practice 6.
What was the
big old thing?
Was reckless.
You can take your chances when you smoke it. You can't expect to get people treatment the rest of us get if you're going to be
out. The problem, I know you've got a problem with that. You know, we'll discuss that.
It's not too severe.
Yeah. Okay, good. Okay, Mr. Chairman, may I point out the changes that were done in this kidnapping?
Page 48.
Okay. There were no changes as to kidnapping in the first degree other than the elimination of some language in subsection B, line 25, which referred to this not precluded offense for kidnapping in the second degree, which felt that was superfluous, it was unnecessary, and should be reflected in commentary. Kidnapping in the second degree, subsection 4 has been rewritten. Previously, we said the abduction, we're on page 2, line 8, the abduction is not coupled with an intent to cause death or threaten to cause death or serious physical injury. Previously, we used the term to use deadly force, but we've redefined, previously we used the term deadly physical force. Well, we've redefined deadly physical force in the justification section, and it's not appropriate now to use the term deadly physical force here. So we used simply cause death or cause serious physical injury.
That's not really a substantive
change. It's not a substantive change, correct. That is correct. Custodial interference in first degree, no changes. Custodial interference in second degree, no changes. Unlawful imprisonment.
You eliminate.
Wait, there's a change. There's a change somewhere. One second.
And
you want your draft here?
Yes, please. That was help. I just got this right now. Somehow. Okay, custodial interference, we made a few minor changes in terms of custodial interference in first degree. We just changed person taken in ties from lawful custodian to victim.
Eliminated.
Oh, yes.
We pulled out that language.
Okay, could you go back to line 4 on page 2? Okay, where we say it's an affirmative defense to a prosecution for kidnapping that the victim is a child under 18 or incompetent person. That is new language. And what that provides is that the only time you have a defense to kidnapping is when you're a relative and you take a person under 18 or an incompetent person, and you also meet the requirements of subsection 3 or 4. Previously, subsection 2 was not there. What it was in our defense to unlawful imprisonment in the second... I'm sorry.
Oh, let's see. Didn't we have a problem in the definition of the word incompetent as opposed to another word?
Incapacitated.
Yeah, we've taken care of that.
So that we don't have a word that's used as a word of art elsewhere.
That's correct.
Okay.
That's correct. We're going to have a common definition of incompetent. That's right, Jim. We are going to have a common definition of incompetent applying to the entire code.
Yeah, going in general.
Yeah, okay. Okay, but anyway, on line, again, the victim is a child under 18 years of age or incompetent.
The sex crimes?
No.
No,
that's incapacitated.
Oh, right.
Yes.
So that was the problem.
Okay. The victim is a child under 18 years of age or an incompetent person. This says that if you take a, hypothetically, you could take your father-in-law under the bill as drafted and hold him in a cave where he's not going to be likely to be found just because you like watching him. Right? Now,
he's a groovy guy? Or?
Right. I don't know. You may have some other intent. But anyway, subsection 2 requires that the victim be under 18 or an incompetent person for you to have a defense to kidnapping in the second degree. And what that does, it gets you out of kidnapping in the second degree, and it brings you into custodial interference. All right.
So in an appropriate case, you may still be guilty of something, but you won't be guilty
yes.
of being felony.
Yes, that is correct. Coercion has been redrafted masterfully by Jim, I believe, line 4 through 10 of page 3.
Is there any major changes on custodial interference?
One second. No, there are not.
You skipped on wrongful imprisonment. We removed the second degree.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. That was voted on at the last meeting. Okay.
Coercion. I haven't had time to read that master redrafting. I believe it is. Does it make any changes, or does it just simply deal with all of the agglutinant language?
Basically, it tries to de-agglutinize.
It de-agglutinizes it, but it doesn't change it.
Mr. Chairman, the only thing that you didn't vote on for the last meeting was on page 2, line 4 to 5. The victim is a child under 18 or an incompetent person. I don't know if you want to take it up as part of the amendment to, the motion to adopt this, if someone can make that, or separately. I don't know what the procedure is that, but I'm sure of that. But I want to point out again that you didn't decide that at the last meeting.
Chairman, with regard to that, I think the only reason was that we wanted to see what it would look like using words other than words that were confused with definitions in other sections, and that was the question of incompetent versus incapacitated. I don't know if that's really a heartbreaking change from the other.
I don't think that's accurate. I just wanted, that was not, I did not get the impression you wanted me to add subsection 2 on page 2, line 4. I did not get the impression you asked me to do that. I did that. Okay, and the reason is that if you go to unlawful imprisonment in the second degree, the thing you struck from the bill on page 50 of Hospital 661, you see that it's an affirmative defense to a prosecution under this section that the defendant is a relative of the person of the victim. Okay, on line 22.
No.
All right, that is where it's taken from. I'm sorry, it's taken from line 21. The victim is a child under 18. It's based on that, all right? And the situation was, I believe, that if you didn't if you didn't add subsection 2 to unlawful, to kidnapping in the second degree, you would have a situation where if you stole your father-in-law, you held him in a cage, and you didn't hold him for ransom, you just wanted to look at him,
you wouldn't
be guilty of anything.
Yeah.
Correct.
Right.
Thank you. You wouldn't be guilty of anything. And I think that he should be guilty of something.
We don't intend that result, and that's why you
right.
stuck it up there.
Thank you.
Right.
Does anybody have any problems with subsection 2 being in there?
Okay. Unless, of course, you're really in the groove on your grandfather and Kay, in which case you want to leave the bill.
You intend to sexually assault him. It's not covered anymore.
Any problem with that? Okay, go ahead, Barry.
Well, I believe that's it. Jim, do you slide it?
Look at
well, you took the physical force out
yeah,
of
well,
you
replaced by force.
Right.
Yeah.
There?
Yeah.
Barry,
give me a quick example of custodial interference in the second degree. Custodial interference in the second degree? Fine. Okay. I have, there's a divorce decree, and it says mother shall have custody of the child forever. Except visitation rights for me or something, or I get him once a week. I get the kid, and I hold him I hold him with an intent to hold him permanently or for a protracted period, and knowing I have no legal right to do so. I don't necessarily take him out of the state. I may take him.
Then you go to
the second degree, which is C felony. In other words, if I cause the victim to be removed from the state. In other words, I take the kid and I bring him down to Oregon. I've committed a felony, and the good thing about that is it's a felony is extraditable, and a misdemeanor is not.
But if you just run over to school every day and take a kid out of school and take him up to the cabin or hide him out, you're only guilty of a misdemeanor.
You may not even be guilty of a misdemeanor. You have to intend, in other words, you have to take him from your lawful custodian with intent to hold him permanently or for a protracted period.
That's exactly what the school is, the lawful custodian.
Well,
you're taking him. It looks like somebody do that every day. I don't see
at least some. Well, I think that's maybe dealing with another issue other than custodial interference. This is really getting at child stealing. I mean, that's the intent of these statutes, to get it to kind of, well, we commonly think of child stealing. You have to prove, you know, the thing is, I'm sure you're going to hear that, well, this criminalizes child custody disputes. I think it's important to note that, number one, you have to know you have no legal right for the custody of the kid. Number two, it doesn't cover situations where you just hold the kid an extra day or you bring him back a few hours late. You have to prove a specific intent, hold him permanently over a protracted period.
Fred, Chairman, I didn't catch it with it. That is what it is in 661, too, and I didn't catch this one problem, but we skip one degree of criminality.
What?
Custodial interference in the first degree is a C felony, but in the second degree is a B misdemeanor, and yet it could describe pretty serious conduct.
Well,
I'm wondering about that.
All I'm saying is that I thought they adopted a policy of misclassification issues to be considered at one time.
Well, we have talked about them, though. We were talking about them.
Well, yeah, you can.
Anyway.
The commission originally classified
this. What was the commission's reason for skipping a degree of criminality between the first and second degree of custodial interference?
I think it was the fact that even though I tell you that it doesn't cover ordinary child custody disputes, they want to be sure that, you know, that since it, some people think it does, that it should be the lowest form of criminality in the code, which should be misdemeanor. You know, it's just that fear. Some states don't even have a second degree statute. They only cover custodial interference when you take a kid out of the state or you're exposed to the risk of injury. They don't want to even get into that area. We got into it, but we got into it, you know, fairly cautiously.
Well, where does it say in here where anything about being a father?
I'm not sure.
What if I just said, go get this kid?
Yeah, well, then you're really kidnapping.
Well, why not? And, you know, it's a person.
Yeah, but kidnapping. You'll be charged with kidnapping.
The child you're taking is not a relative.
That's right. You can charge with kidnapping.
I can just see.
Yeah.
All
that
problem. I'm just saying, it's a nice taking a kid out of school and they're gone.
Wait, give me an example then.
Well, just I've seen all these divorce cases. Most people have them, they're grabbing the kid every day and having him out and it's a misdemeanor.
Wait, they're grabbing the kid every day and hiding him out, so it wouldn't be covered by that.
It's not high enough.
You think it should be a little more serious offense than if you go take a child. If you're not a legal custodian
for whatever reason, take it and keep it. The commission originally
classified it as a misdemeanor, then not the death of being misdemeanor. I think it was, when we reclassified it, I thought it was pretty unanimous.
Lisa?
Well, there are other remedies, aren't there, available to the parent who has custody? I mean, can't that parent, if it's a repeated pattern of taking, what would that parent do?
Seek a worthless piece of paper called a temporary restraining order.
See, I'm not sure I understand your school example.
Lawyers charge good fees for and worth a pile of beans by a February dealing with real human behavior. Now, a guy wants, you know, he said, I got this piece of paper, it's Saturday afternoon, there's no court sitting. If you don't do it, this piece of paper says your wrist is going to be slapped and then an order will issue for you to show up next Thursday to show cause why you should not be held in contempt because you didn't follow this piece of paper. Then the angry parent or emotional parent, it's a Saturday, all that the other parent did was pay a lawyer a massive fee for generating some paper that's worthless in most cases, in my opinion.
Well, I think I agree with that, that it should be an A misdemeanor rather than a B, but...
Well, I'll make a note of it, and when we bring up our misclassification issues, which there are obviously a number of them, I'll make them.
Mr. Chairman, with that reservation circled in the big black, whatchamacallit, okay. I'm going to move this entire thing to the kidnapping and custodial interference position.
This is number
what?
Six?
Or seven?
Number
six.
Are there any changes in the definition?
Six. No substantive changes.
Okay, the motion is to adopt amendment 6.
With the reservation that we will adjust the classification of custodial interference later.
Yeah. Is there any objection to that?
We've got something, yes. Yeah. It's okay, I just do not go on. We got two very important things discussing tonight. Justification, use of force by peace officers, for example, and sex is the minimum.
Wow, everybody should be here.
And you got to have a full committee vote on sex.
Right.
And is everybody going to be here tonight?
I can't speak for Larry. I thought we were going to go Wednesday and Thursday.
Tuesday and
Thursday.
Okay, 7 o'clock tonight.
Yeah, here it is. I'm going to be discussing the thing from 6. I frankly have to get the guy down.
Thank you.